So I'm not sure why we have this unique sitting arrangement, but we'll try to make the best of it. So our discussion this morning is going to be about a particular incident that was widely reported in the news media. Sports in Baltimore is a very, very important topic. So growing up, we didn't have a real hockey team. We had a minor league hockey team called the Skipjacks. We have a baseball team which hasn't been very good since I can remember, but this year is actually very good. And then what's that?
We have one like that too.
So then several years ago, a football team came to Baltimore, and it became very beloved, and people are very into it. Ad kedei kach that the colors of this football team are purple, so people, they on Friday during football season, many professions, everyone dresses in purple. It's like a whole thing. So the football team has won two Super Bowls in a very short period, in only 13 or something years of existence. So it's a very big deal. Turns out that it was recently reported a particular individual in this football team apparently was involved in some kind of altercation. Then it came to light that there was a video of exactly what happened between this individual and his then fiance. So this drew a tremendous amount of media attention, and now he's been released by the team, and he has been indefinitely banned from the game of football. So that was kind of what got me thinking about this morning's topic, and just three words of introduction. The first is that one could, and certainly for children there is this possibility, one could be under the misimpression that because somebody is a successful athlete, so this would make them some kind of role model in life. And really, obviously, it doesn't need to be said, but it's always good to remind ourselves that that has absolutely no merit, that argument. The fact that somebody has a certain athletic prowess and the fact that they have certain skills to play ball doesn't mean anything about whether or not they should be role models for us. And this is an important thing to remind children and adolescents. Last year, actually, the Kollel did a whole program for, we do in Hillel Torah and Ari Crown for groups of children. So one of the topics was about heroes. Now, how do you identify what is a Jewish hero and what's not a Jewish hero? So the fact that some kids have sports figures up on the wall in their room, you know, that's neither here nor there. That doesn't make somebody a hero. So that's something that's important to always remind ourselves when these things happen, is that the fact that somebody's a good football player doesn't mean that we should emulate them in any way. Sometimes yes and sometimes no. It's like everything else in life. You have to see who is a person who's worthy of admiration and worthy of and certainly emulation, as opposed to somebody who's not. I can think of many athletes who I would definitely be uncomfortable hanging around in a dark alley around them, certainly if they were inebriated. I wouldn't want to be there. So that's, I think, the first thing. The second thing is that we talk about these interpersonal conflicts. So obviously, I think the story was that they were having an argument in an elevator. In general, Bechlal, it's dangerous to get into a fight in an elevator because the door may open any time. So general, the whole idea of thinking that an elevator is a good place to have an argument is kind of like a bad assumption. So also, it happened to be videotaped. So it's another reason that's not a good idea to get into an argument. But probably the best reason why it's not a good idea to get into an argument is because of the Rambam in the second parak in Hilchos Deos. Whoa, what is that? The Rambam in the second parak in Hilchos Deos, it's not in the packet, but the Rambam, and we've mentioned this many times, so we'll just reiterate it, the Rambam says that in general, a person is supposed to be balanced. A person is supposed to be noeg b'mida beinonis. Right, if you were to ask me, and this is a big discussion now about, and I was thinking maybe we should talk about it one Sunday, about this very, very extreme, is crazy, dangerous Islamic group, ISIS or ISIL or Islamic States. It's very, very, very extreme. So somebody would ask you, is Judaism a religion of extremism? So the Rambam would tell you, generally not. The Rambam encourages being a very balanced person, especially when it comes to character traits. A person shouldn't be overly stingy and not overly magnanimous. You can't give away everything that you have. On the other hand, you can't be a penny pincher. So the Rambam talks about the importance of having balance, except for two areas. In this area, and these are two areas, but they're really related to each other, the Rambam says it's an obligation to be an extremist. We must. So much so that the Rambam says it's asur lo la'adam linogem bebeinonis. It is prohibited. We must not act in these ways in a balanced fashion. We have to be extreme, absolutely an extremist. This is a good thing to know. You're waiting. Oh. So the Rambam says, what are they? They are, number one, gova halev, and the other one is kaas. Gova halev is hubris, arrogance, and the other one is anger. Now, not everybody was endowed by the Rabbono Shalom with immense patience when they were born. It's a learned habit, I found out. So this is an avoda. The Rambam says it's absolutely required. It's not okay, according to the Rambam, to be, you know what, somewhat arrogant and somewhat not arrogant. The Rambam says it's absolutely essential that a person strive to be extreme in their humility. And this is not something we can discuss at length this morning because of time, but many Svarim of Musar explain that the root of so much evil in the world is the Midah of Gaiva, that the person puts themselves in the middle and says, everything is about me. And obviously, that's why the Midah of Kas, of anger and frustration, is correlated with the Midah of Gova Halev, of arrogance. I've used this mashal more than once, where, let's say, you have a guy, and he arranges to meet someone, and they're meeting, let's say, in New York City, on the corner of 34th Street and Lexington or Park, you know, one of these streets in that area. And they arrange they're going to meet there, and he somehow gets a hold of a car, because he's not from New York, so he doesn't have a car, so he borrows someone's car, and they arrange they're going to meet, and he's waiting in the car, he's sitting and waiting, and at that time the cell phones weren't so prevalent. He's sitting waiting in the car 5 minutes and 10 minutes. So you have, according to the Rambam, you have two ways to look at it. You could start to get frustrated, or you could say, wait a second, if it's all about me, so then my time is valuable. I thought we were meeting at this and this time. I'm expecting that she's going to come down and know what she's doing over there. So the sentences generally start with I. So in that case, of course, you're going to get very frustrated because I'm waiting and my time is valuable. But if it's not all about my time, if you start wondering, well, maybe there's something you don't know about. At this time, I didn't know anything about ironing hair. You know what I'm saying? This is a whole, I didn't know anything about this. So apparently that's a whole procedure that needs whatever. So there was a whole, this is a whole Torah in and of itself. Who knows how long that could take? And you could have a start and a stop, and all kinds of things could go on. All kinds of things. So if you look at it from somebody else's perspective, then you don't get so angry. Generally, people who get angry only look at it from their own perspective. So that's why for the Rambam, these two things are interrelated. The Midah of Gova Halev, of being arrogant, of only caring about yourself, of being self-absorbed, and the Midah of Kas, the Midah of getting angry. So that's the second word of introduction, that generally what precipitates these kinds of conflicts, or conflicts in general, is the person putting themselves before other people, not being willing, and I can't speak for anybody else, but I find this is one of the challenges of life, is to be able not to get so hung up in what's important to you, but what means something to somebody else. And why is it that they're going through what they're going through? And then maybe it'll shed some light. Oh, Taka, I didn't even realize that they had this going on. And it never dawned on me that this is how they felt, or this was their approach to the issue. So that's, I think, the second thing. And then the third thing to keep in mind is a Rashi that is in the beginning of Sefer Shmos. And it's a Rashi that's taught to young children already in day school. And it's a very important Rashi to keep in mind, because it's not just about the circumstance that we're going to talk about where someone actually hits someone else, but even before that, right? Moshe Rabbeinu comes out, and this is one of the two formative instances that kind of shape his worldview. He sees a Jewish person hitting someone else, another Jewish person. And the quote in the pasuk is "Vayomer lo Rasha." He says to the Rasha, which means he is the wicked one, "Lama sake reyecha." Why should you hit your friend? So wait a second. If you were a proper grammarian, you would say, Lama hikisa. Why did you hit your friend? Why does it say Lama sake, which is in the future tense? It's the second person future tense. Right? Why? It's almost like saying, why will you hit your friend? It should have said, why did you hit your friend if he saw two people hitting each other? So Rashi there quotes from earlier sources in Chazal. He says that when a person raises their hand to hit somebody else, he's already labeled as a Rasha. It's a very interesting idea. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, he sees a hand that's raised, that person is already labeled as a Rasha. Now that could be interpreted in multiple ways, but that's a whole nother idea of looking at, so to speak, like prophylactic, what happens before, God forbid, the injury is actually perpetrated on the other person. But what does it say about the person who's perpetrating this thing? Even before you hurt somebody else, you have already become a Rasha when you pick up your hand to hurt somebody else. So these are three important things to keep in mind, I think. Number one, that we don't idolize. Maybe we like football as a recreational activity for ourselves or for watching football. It's fun, it's relaxing, it's great. But we don't necessarily idolize people who play football. The second thing is the idea that kas and anger and conflict, it, especially in terms of this idea of hurting other people, it very often stems from this idea of arrogance, of people putting themselves first. And then the third concept of, it's not just about if you hit someone else, but what kind of person are you if you raise your hand against somebody else? Yeah, Dave.
Kind of new here, so I don't know if there's a lot of
No, there's no such thing as new here. We're all new here. Yeah, the questions are all open.
So I played a lot of sports in my life. I've coached a lot of sports in my life. And isn't there a concept that in all of these situations, there's lessons for us and for them to learn that are part and parcel in everything else that we do here?
So I would say you're 100% right, and that's probably why we talk about it, which is how do we take every circumstance that we're given in life and learn from it? I think sports is a great example of where you can have an opportunity, and that's why some of the people in this room have either participated themselves or children who have participated in sports where they have gained a tremendous amount. I know certain coaches, they have unbelievable hashpa on the children. Amazing. Incredibly inspiring. So, you know, I'm not going to name names in this community because I don't want to leave anybody out, but there are certain people who have that tremendous hashpa, and the kids are able to learn, and we are also. So, like we say, mikol malamdai hiskalti. We need to learn from every circumstance, and everybody needs to learn from every circumstance. I think that's kind of the way that I would view it is, yeah, let's look at this as an opportunity to step back and think about what it means. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Dodge the bullet. Okay. So let's begin with this particular case with the Rambam in the first page in Hilchos Ishus. Now, it happens to be that in this particular instance, this couple was not married. But the Rambam formulates for us, based on a Gemara Maseches Yevamos and Daf Samach Beis Amud Beis, the Rambam tells us cultivating a certain attitude. And again, I'm not speaking about any particular circumstance, I'm just speaking generally what the Rambam thinks about how, and in this case, it's about a husband has to relate to his wife. The Rambam says, V'chein, tzivu chachamim, the rabbis required, sheyehyeh adam machabed es ishto, a person is obligated to honor his wife, yoser yeser migufo, more than himself, v'ohava, and to love her, kagufo, like himself. V'im yesh lo mamon, if he has the financial wherewithal, marbe betovasa, kafi hamamon. You should increase, he should give as much as possible, according to how much you have, for what she is interested in. V'lo yatel aleha ema yesera, don't have an added measure of awe and trepidation. V'yiye diburo ima benachas, and he should speak politely with her. V'lo yihye atzev, he shouldn't be depressed. V'lo rogez, and not full of wrath. That is the way that the Rambam says that a husband has to treat his wife.
It's the opposite true.
So the opposite is true in the next halacha. That's, but that I don't know if that needs emphasis. I think maybe in this case it was the husband who needed, although I believe there is lo aleinu, there is domestic abuse that goes in both directions, lo aleinu. So this Rambam, if we look at the Lashon carefully, I think it's worthy of consideration, because the Rambam says that the man has to honor his wife more than himself, and he has to love her like himself. So what's the distinction there? So this is based on a Gemara in Yevamos, and Rashi there says, what does it mean that a man has to honor his wife more than himself? So he says, the Lashon of Rashi is, Zilusa de'itzisa kasha mi de'gavra. There's a certain sensitivity, there's a certain quality that is different for a woman than it is for a man. Like, I don't know if it's this way anymore, but it used to be that if you would ride on the subway and you were having a bunch of guys who were using certain language, if there was a woman sitting in the subway car, they would have decency not to speak like that. Rabbi Newman is nodding. I don't know if it's anymore. I don't know what year you're referring to in your head when you're thinking back there, but there was a time when it was like this, right?
The women are the same now. So,
I'm not speaking about what it's like today, but in principle, that was what it was like. You wouldn't speak like that in front of, because there's a certain distinguished character that a woman has. There's a certain feinkeit, as you would say in Yiddish. I don't even know how to translate that. There's a certain, there's a certain proper etiquette that you just have. So that's what the first thing is. L'chabda yoser migufo, you have to honor her more than yourself, because, you know, guys are sitting around. Maybe they wouldn't treat each other. You know, you're willing to whatever. I don't want to speak about what might happen. You have a bunch of guys sitting around. But just because you're willing to be mochel on your own kavod, so then that might lead you to think, well, my wife is my buddy, so I can also treat her the same way. So the Rambam says, no, you can't do that. That's Rashi's interpretation. But there's another way of interpreting it, which is interesting. From the Yad Rama, Ramer Halevi Abulafia from Spain, came after the Rambam. But if you look on page 2, he has a different explanation, which may actually fit with a mitzvah called Kibur Avaim, because the mitzvah here is kavod. Is kavod. So look what the Yad Rama says. This is in a different context in Sanhedrin, but in the underline it says, Vaha Tanya, we found this brisa, Ha'ohevis Ishto Kagufo, one who loves his wife like himself, Kolomar, Shehu Chas Aleha, Kemo Shehu Chas Al Gufo. That his concern for her is as he would be concerned for herself.
Himself.
Right? There was an unbelievable tzaddik in Yerushalayim. The namesake for my son Aryeh. His name is Rav Aryeh Levin. So there is an unbelievably unusual spiritual giant. So he once went to the doctor and he said, my wife's foot is hurting us. That was the story. My wife's foot is hurting us. His he had that sensitivity for all Jews. He would go, he was the Rav HaAsirim, he was the rabbi of the prisoners. So he would go visit, and he would tell people, you know, on the bus, there's many stories. There's two books, if you don't have, the incredibly inspiring works. One is called The Tzaddik in Our Time in English, and then there's a second volume, which is in Hebrew. I don't know if it was translated. He would go on a bus to visit Latrun to the prison. So the bus driver asked him, who are you going to visit? He said, I'm going to have a son who's there. So he had an incredible sensitivity. That idea that my wife's foot is hurting us, that's mamish what he says, shechas aleh kshuchas al gufo. Like, it literally, that's the way he treated his wife. But then it says Viter, says the Yad Rama, aval yeser migufo lo shayach lemeimar. It's not possible to say that I'm going to feel about anyone else more than I feel about myself. Shari ava dover hamosu lelevhu, ve'in odam yochel lehov es acher yoser migufo. And a person can't love someone else more than he loves himself. That's an interesting comment, which fits with the context of v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, like you love yourself. Is it possible to love anybody else more than you love yourself? Not necessarily. But says Yad Rama, that's when it comes to love. But what does it mean? Le'inya ava le'inyan kibud, but to honor, he says, that's davar she'ifsharhu, that's possible. Shahar yachol l'chabda yeser migufo. You can honor her more than yourself. How so? B'malbushim, like with buying clothing, Shenoim yoser mishalo, that are nicer than the clothes that he has for himself. So what is the Yad Rama teaching us? That honor doesn't just mean the way that you relate to someone, but it also means something practical. The mitzvah of Kibur Avaim, what is it? So it's to service someone. That's the mitzvah of Kibur Avaim. So that's why when the Gemara says, what is Ezu Kibud Ve'ezu Amore? What is a person who has a parent that they honor them and they have a measure of fear? So Mora is, don't sit in their seat, don't contradict them, don't disrespect them. What is Kibud? Kibud is Machilu Mashkeu Malbisho Manilo. Give him something to eat, to drink, to dress, and to put on shoes. Now, the Yerushalmi says that kavod is based on the ratzon of the person. Ritzono shel adam zeh kavodo. So if I went home, if I visited my parents in August, and I offered to put on my father's shoes, so he would think that's weird. He wouldn't want me to do that. But when my grandfather, Olav Shalom, was elderly, so I put on his shoes. I put on his socks. That's the ikar kibud aveim, is actually serving the person, helping them with what their needs are. So therefore, the Yad Ramah is saying, when the husband relates to his wife, it means he needs to put her material needs, he needs to take care of the things that are there for her before they come above and beyond the things that he does for himself. And many of us know people like this, who, when it came to their own, you know, needs or their own clothes or their own stuff, they were moichel, they didn't have such hakpadas. But when it came to people that they love, certainly their wife or their children, they're willing to go much more, far beyond what they would do for themselves. And that's perhaps according to the Yad Ramah, it's not just about an attitude, but it's also about actions. So this is, I would say, the first way to think about what is a proper attitude to cultivate when we think about, unfortunately, this incident. Obviously, it would be crazy to think about some kind of violence, and that's what we'll talk about next. If you look on the next page, there are more sources than the few that we're going to bring. How does the Jewish tradition and halacha relate to the concept of domestic violence? So you would think that if you were living, let's say you were living in the Near East, in the 8th century or in the 9th century, so we would think it's probably a very primitive society, and women in those days didn't necessarily have the same recognized rights or protections that they have today. So you wonder how Jewish society would view this kind of question about domestic violence, lo aleinu. So there is a fascinating Tshuvas HaGaonim, and Mem Beis here, I put the arrow, from Yosef Ibn Evyatur. And I don't know who that is. So I'm not sure if we're talking 8th century here or 10th century, but it's really old. And look at how he writes this case. Interesting case. Visha Sha'altem. This is on line number 1 at the end. It's now line number 2. Isha Sha'amra, a woman who says, Efsher Biploni Bali, I can't stay married to this husband. Shehu Maka Osi, that he hits me. Umetzair Osi, and he bothers me, he abuses me. V'nimtza hadavar emes, and it comes out that it's true. Ubiksha mimenu get, and she wants to get a get, she wants out of the marriage. Kofin oso liten get. Do you coerce him to give her a get? O kofin oso leishiv tachas baila. Then, or do you say, no, she should stay married, v'mitzar osa b'chinam, but then if he disturbs her, if he bothers her for no reason, teitze b'ksuva kula olo, and then he has to shell out. Now, in those days, it's different than it is today. Today, one of the challenges that we have, and this is part of the issue with the crisis, the challenge with agunas, which is why you need to have a prenuptial agreement, there's no question about that, is that in the old days, a ksuba was such a huge and enormous amount of money that you see in the Gemara, there are certain husbands who were, they were lowlifes, they would go to all kinds of shenanigans and stunts to get out of being obligated to pay the ksuba, because it was an enormous amount of money. It was like, for many people, generally speaking, it was at least a whole year's salary.
To whom?
To the wife. The rule is that when a marriage dissolves, the wife has automatic protection of a ksuba. And that's why it's prohibited for a couple to ever be married and the wife not to know where her ksuba is. Because that's her safety net. Sometimes it's a crazy thing that after the wedding, this sometimes happens, 2 o'clock in the morning, the Masada Kedushin gets a call, the guy who gets married says, we don't know where her ksuba is. So that's a big problem. That happens sometimes. We don't know where her ksuba is. So they have some kind of way that she has to be able to get security, because she can't stay married unless she has the security that she is holding the ksuba over his head. That's the original intent. Shalote kalaba ein of lotzia. And if they lose the ksuba, they're going to have to write either a new ksuba, or in a shas hatchak situation, he may have to write her an IOU that says, you know, if you come to Beis Din, I'll owe you $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000, whatever it is, or he gives her an expensive watch or something. She has to hold on to something that she's not nervous. She has to have the confidence. So then in times of the Gemara, what was going on was that sometimes the husband, if he was a jerk, he would play foilishtik to try to get out of the obligation to pay the ksuba. So that's exactly really what's going on here, that she's holding over his head the ksuba because it's an exorbitant amount of money, huge amount of money, and he says, I don't want to pay the ksuba. You want to go? You can go free. So that's really at issue here. That's what's kind of underneath the story. So says the tshuva here, and it's interesting to me, again, I would have thought, you know, 1,300 years ago, 1,500 years ago, they would say, what's wrong with hitting somebody? Who would have, I don't know, you know, who knows what life was like back then. But he writes, Havu Yodim, you should know, She'im niskayim hadavar be'idim, if it's really true, She'hika osa pam upa'amayim, that if he really did hit her once or twice, Chayavin bezdin lohochicho al kach, the bezdin has to rebuke him, and say, "V'lomar lo heve yodea she'i ato rashai lahakosa." You are not allowed. V'im shanisa, if you repeat this behavior, be'ivaltecha, with your ivelus is a crime. Teitzei b'ksuba, you're going to have to give her the ksuba money, and she's going to be in the right. And not only that, this is, I guess, the original. I would say it's like a primitive form of probation. Umashin osa. What do we do? Umashin osa imo al yad eid nemon. You have to have a probation officer to supervise with her to find out. Im shana bi yivalto teita b'ksuba. You have a probation officer follow them around and make sure that this husband never does it again. Shekach amru chachamim. This is what the rabbi says. Lachayim nitna v'lo letzar nitna. She's meant to live and not to suffer. And so much so that if he would do that, then he would be kicked out of the marriage and he would be stuck with the bill for the ksuba. But it's more than that. Later on in the 16th century, the Radvaz, Rav David ben Zimra in Egypt, writes a very sharply worded tshuva where he says, aside from the obvious harmonious issues in terms of their marriage, there is a beferisha iser d'oraisa. There is an absolute prohibition to hit someone. And he says that applies, doesn't matter whether it's a husband to a wife or a wife to a husband or to a neighbor. It doesn't matter. There's no such thing as raising a hand. And he points to the Rambam on page 4, where he says it's absolutely unconscionable that a husband should, Rachman al-Islan, should raise the hand to hit his girlfriend or spouse or fiance, whatever. Says the Rambam here in the beginning of Perek Hey in Hilchos Chovel Umazik on page 4, Aser la'adam lachbol, a person is prohibited to cause a wound, bein ba'atzmo, in himself, ubein b'chaveiro, in someone else. The first part is interesting, that I'm not allowed to wound myself. Now why is that? Because we're not, the Radvaz explains in another place, we're not the owners of our bodies, we're the custodians. And the Rabbeinu Shalom says, just like we're not allowed to hit other people, we're not allowed to hit ourselves. Chafetz Chaim says the same thing about Lashon Hara. Just like you're not allowed to say Lashon Hara about the person next to you, you're also not allowed to say Lashon Hara about yourself. You have no right to degrade yourself. You are a Tzelem Elokim, and you don't have the right to degrade yourself in either way. Yeah.
What about the young men that wanted to avoid going into the Russian army for 25 years where they would chop off a couple of fingers or something?
Awesome. So this is a perfect segue to the next line the Ram will come back to. A similar question comes up in Halacha regarding cosmetic surgery. Because there a person is violating the prohibition of chavala, of wounding, but there's a specific reason why they're going to undergo that particular procedure. So the next line of the Rambam is crucial. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, has a tshuva where he talks about cosmetic surgery. It's medayik in the next line of the Rambam. We'll read it all the way till the next line. V'lo achova b'vad, ela kol hamakya adam kosher miYisrael, bein katon, bein godol, bein ish, bein isha, derech, here's the key line, nitzayon. Now there is another girsa where that little star is not derech nitzayon. The word nitzayon means like abusive, vanquishing. The other manner, the other way that the word is used in a different gear says derech bizayon. Bizayon means humiliating the person. You're beating them up. So in that case, hareze over below sase. That person violates a beferish alav in the pasuk. So this is where Rav Moshe is medayik, that in certain cases, if it's not derech nitzayon, if it's not abusive, a person goes for a cosmetic procedure, so they're going for a constructive purpose. They're going for a reason. This this is a great, even on a small, simple level, if I'm not mistaken, a person can bleed when they have their ears pierced, right? Is that true? No, they don't bleed?
You could.
They do?
Yeah, sure.
They can.
They could.
They can. Yeah.
Oh, so now, if they could and not necessarily, that's an interesting question about psikresha, not a psikresha, darvashena miskaven. Let's assume that if I were to get my ears pierced, I would bleed. Let's assume that for a second. Is that a fair assumption?
Could be.
All right. Let's assume that it would happen. I've never had it, so I can't tell you from experience. But let's say I would. So now you're going to tell me, wait a second, that's a shail of chavala. I'm causing myself to bleed. So how can I have a pierced ear? So the answer is, I want to have a pierced ear because I want to have earrings. So it's not derech nitzayon. I'm not being hurt by the person who's going to. I wouldn't do it myself. I probably would go to somebody who's a professional to have it done. That professional. Right. That professional is not hurting me. They're trying to help me. So this is the basis. So the same thing will come out. Sometimes, lo aleinu, they had unbelievable mesiras nefesh for Jews who, because they knew that if they were going to be conscripted, then that could be the end of their life. Forget about Jewish life. You're talking 25 years in the Tsar's army. So people did unbelievable things to avoid that with incredible bracha. Anyway.
Can I just ask some quick questions?
Sure.
Yeah. Is this where the concept of kofim atra merotzeh? Oh,
so that's another important concept that's related, which what Lori is referring to is the Rambam says the law is that a person, a man, has to give a get willingly. It can never be coerced. But the Rambam has a very interesting formulation where the Rambam says, look, everybody really wants to do the right thing deep down. You do. And people from Chicago can appreciate this Chicago style of, you know, encouraging people. So the Rambam says, everybody really, really wants to do the right thing. Deep down in their soul, they want to do the right thing. So the Rambam says, sometimes, now, this is limited with important caveat, this is not to be employed by random people, random rabbis living in America and wherever you are. This is not to be employed in that manner. But it's supposed to be employed in the proper way, which, by the way, in Israel, it is done this way, that they will incarcerate a husband who refuses to give his wife a get. The Rambam says, kofen oso, you coerce him, ad sheyom arotzani, until he says, I agree.
I'm ready.
Now, at that point, how excited is he to be about giving a get? Probably not. But the Rambam says, the minute that he says he is willing, that's no longer considered under duress. And there are a lot of, actually, specifications about how to do that. There's a lot of controversy about the New York State. There was something called the Get Law. So the rule is that this type of coercion has to be done specifically under the supervision of a rabbinic court, not by the New York State. So that was some of the question about how to formulate a law in America as opposed to in Israel. In Israel, they have a rabbanut. The rabbanut said if a person is a misarev to give his wife a get, they're going to throw him in the slammer. In extreme cases, they would do that. They can withhold the person's driver's license. They could do all kinds of things to counterbalance. So anyway, that's part of the process of how to coerce the husband. In that case, it would be the best and would bring the guy in and tell him, excuse me, you have to give your wife. And he says no, so they will coerce him to do that. And then, not only that, then they would say, they'll say, you owe her X number of dollars. And if he says, no, I'm not going to pay, then they'll come to his house and take away his television and his car and everything. You know, it's called Yordan L'Nechasov. They would appropriate his property and distribute it to the wife. Now, practically, it's not happening today for a whole variety of reasons, but that, in principle, is what's going on. That the Bezna is going to uphold the responsibility of the Ksuba, that they have both authority, the authority to force him to give the get on a mitzvah side, and also the authority to enforce, in those days, taking the money from the husband and giving it to the wife. So now coming back here, now the Rambam says further. Interesting. Where is it saying in the Torah that you're not allowed to hit someone? It's a tough call. It's hard to know. Where does it say in the Chumash that you're not allowed to hit someone? So what's that?
No, I loved it.
Oh, okay. So that's a great example of a person who hit somebody. So in the case that you're referring to, a person owns, and this is a different discussion for a different time, a Gentile servant. And if he cut off the edge of their finger or their limb or their eye or their tooth, if he knocked it out, so then they go free. But where does it say actually there is a prohibition to hit someone? Obviously, the Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, we're familiar with, if lo aleinu, if... Okay, oh, so there it's discussing if one person hits another person, how much he has to pay.
Right?
But let's say Dr. Polin, you see sometimes he carries a weapon in shul, he has this strong stick. So let's say Dr. Polin saw me in the hallway, he didn't like the shir 1 week, so he gives me a zetz right over the head with his cane. You wouldn't do that, but theoretically I'm speaking. Just speaking theoretically. Now, you're looking in the Chumash, you're like, doesn't say anywhere I'm not allowed to hit him with the cane. Happens to be, you know, if you knocked me out, so then you would have to pay nezek, Tsar, Ripoy, Sheves, Boshes, you would pay all those things, but you're like, no problem, I'm independently wealthy, I can write a bigger check as I want. So like, no, what's the big deal? So the Rambam says, you're right, that's not the place. Those halachas and parashat mishpatim only say you have to pay. But who says I'm not allowed to do it? Let's say I have a big check, but I say, I don't care, I'm going to punch you in the nose, and then I'll pay you afterwards. So the Rambam says, look, in an interesting place, there is a rule that the Beis Din in the old days used to give malchus, they used to give lashes in certain circumstances. And there is a prohibition that the person who administered the lashes was only allowed to give the prescribed number of lashes. Let's say they had a special medical professional staff there to say, the person, let's say they're weak, and they can't endure 39 lashes, they can only endure 18 lashes. But the guy who's giving out the lashes, he's like all excited today. It's his first time giving lashes. He's gotten through 18. Now he's thinking he's going to go one more just for good luck. What does the Torah say? Shenemar, says the Rambam, Lo Yosif Lahakoso. A person who is the Shaliach Bezdin to give Malkus is, there is an Isser. He is told from the Torah, he's not allowed to give even a single extra lash. So says the Rambam, in his Hira Torah Milahosif Bahakos Hachote, if the Torah says you're not allowed to hit a person who is guilty, Agdekach, he's so guilty that the Bezin would actually give him lashes, such a person you're not allowed to give him even one extra hit? Kalvachomer, says the Rambam, of course you're not allowed to hit anyone. Certainly, says Kalvachomer Lamake Esatzadik, to somebody who's a righteous person. That's why the Rambam said, whether you're a gadol or a katan, whether you're a big person or a small person, it doesn't matter. There is an issur d'oraisa to hit anyone, except for those exceptions where in the old days, let's say, rabbeim would hit their talmidim, and today this doesn't fly, but in the old days, that was part of the process of chinuch. It wasn't derech nitzayon, it wasn't derech bizayon, or parents and children, that was part of chinuch. Again, today, that's a question how that works. But in principle, what's that? With rulers?
Yeah. Boys only.
No. I'm not going to say whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm going to leave that to you.
That's not true. We had a teacher who would pull us by the ear.
Sounds like we all went to the same.
Oive. Okay. Who had a hand? Someone had a hand. Yes.
So, but it's not really directly stated in the Torah that you're not allowed to. There's a derived.
So that's what I'm saying. So the Rambam is saying is that what it says in the Torah is the Shaliach Bezdin is not allowed to hit the person who is being subject to this punishment. And the Rambam says, included in that prohibition is hitting anyone, obviously. And that's the way we would derive it. So there is a separate thing. One thing is, if you hurt someone, you have to pay them. But then there's a separate thing, that if you were called the rabbi and say, excuse me, rabbi, I'm in a conflict here, and I was wondering, can I punch the guy in the nose, even if I'll pay him? The rabbi would tell you, no, look at the Rambam, where the Rambam says it's a prohibition to punch the person in the nose. So that's an important thing to think about. Because on Yom Kippur, maybe I could pay the person, but I still have to ask them for mechila, and I have to say al-chayt for the fact that I punched that person in the nose. So to close this loop on page 5, I gave you a little snippet from a case that came up in the Israeli Supreme Court. There was a guy by the name of Fedida, and I don't know who this Fedida was. I mean, you can look him up online. He's not somebody we know, he's not connected to us. So this person, his name is Fedida, he appealed to the Israeli Supreme Court because he had been convicted of hitting his wife, and he had been sentenced to 4 years in prison. And he appealed on the grounds that his sentence was too harsh. That it was unfair. Now, this opinion is being written by a very, very prestigious and, I would say, even historic justice. His name is Rav Menachem Alon. Rav Menachem Alon was a Rav. He just passed away a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe.
Is that the father of all the five sons?
Yes. Yes. So he was from the great, accomplished Israeli scholars, rabbinically and also legally. So he was a very, very prestigious judge, and he wrote the response. So I took out a whole section here where he describes how Jewish tradition views this type of abuse. And he really piles it on. He starts with the Rambam that we quote, and he starts with the Gemara, then he quotes a tshuva from the Maharam of Rothenburg. And I'll read it for you. Just on the, I gave you both pages, but we'll just start on the bottom of page 5 and we'll just read that one section. This is written by the Maharam of Rothenburg. Maharam of Rothenburg, so he's living in the end of the 13th century. We spoke about him once before. He was the greatest rabbinic luminary of Ashkenazi Jewry in the 13th century, the end of the period of the Balei HaTosafos. He was the one who had been taken ransom and spent 7 years in prison, where he died, and then his bones sat for 7 years until they were ransomed. So he was taken, I think it was 1286 when he was taken. I think he died in 1303, and then it was another 7-8 years until they ransomed his body. When he was there, we mentioned this last year, I think, that he wrote responsum from the castle where he was imprisoned. So this is the same Aram Rutenberg, who is the father, essentially, of the majority of Ashkenazi Psak from the Tosafist period, the end, before the Jews were kicked out of France, and then they're going to have to go to Eastern Europe. So he writes, "Uma acher." We just read this round about hitting. So he writes, I'm in the indentation on the bottom, on page 5. "Uma acher," just like somebody else. "She'enu mitzuva olav lechabdo," that I'm not necessarily mitzuve, specifically obligated to honor them. "Mitzuve hu al haka'aso," I am restricted. I am obligated not to hit them. "Ishto," his wife, "shu mitzuva aleil lechabdo," that he is obligated to honor her. "Eino din shehi mitzuva shelo lahakosa," isn't it obvious that he shouldn't be allowed to hit her? "V'adraba chayav lechabdo yoser migufo," he has to honor her more than himself. And now he says, "Ve'ein ze derech b'nei amenu," that is not the way of our people. "Lahakos nishoseim keminog umos ha'olam," the way that other people do this, remember, he's writing in the 13th century, says that's not how Jews act. Pasnish, we don't do that. "Chalila l'chol b'nei bris me'asos kadavar hazeh," how, heaven forbid we should have such a thing. "V'imaya bol afanenu," and if he would come to us, "din zeh," in our Besdin, here in Rothenburg, in Germany, "she'isha kovelas al baila shemaka usa, hayinu machmirin alav, me'ilu haya make es acher." We would be more stringent about this guy, as worse than if he would beat someone up in the neighborhood brawl, if he would hit his wife. Says Chalila, we can't even speak about this. This is not the way we act. So I think this is an important thing to keep in mind, that when we talk about this kind of behavior, how it's totally out of bounds of what we would expect. Now, Jewish people and Jewish society is not ideal right now. We all have shortcomings individually and collectively, and there are issues that come up. But what are we striving for? We're striving for a society where this is not only doesn't exist, but it's not even tolerated. It's not even countenanced, because such a thing is so foreign to the way, the kind of life that we want to establish for ourselves. Yes.
But if we are in this room, under your tutelage, all agree that this is wrong, that's not the question. The question is what was or what is or should be the responsibility of his team. Another, is that the team's problem? He's a bad guy, but should he be fired by the coach or now the head of the NFL? Should he lose his job because he didn't? That's the issue that I think we're all wondering about.
Interesting. So I didn't actually think about it from that angle. I think there are probably multiple layers to look at in that question. Al Regalach is the first thing that comes to mind. It's worthy of a much further consideration, is what would it mean? What does it mean to keep the person on the team versus not? Is there a difference between an NFL player and somebody who's a clerk in an office? And when you, what kind of message do you send when you keep such a person on a team? So there is an interesting isser. There is an isser called chanifa. Chanifa means flattery. So there is an isser of a chanifa l'rishayim, of flattering people who are evildoers. Because essentially, well, that's a good question, why there is an isser chanifa l'rishayim. It could be because it encourages people to continue that pattern of behavior. So the question becomes, and Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, about putting people on a pedestal who you know have shady activities. So this is an interesting question, that may be, I think, what is involved here. There's an element of chanifa, that if you kind of poo-poo the activity, and so societally we put these people, for whatever reason, right or wrong, in on a pedestal, then essentially the message that you're sending is wrong. I think it's worthy of further consideration. Yeah, I want to think about that some more. Yeah.
No, I was thinking that we are teaching today's youth to idealize these people.
Yeah.
And to idealize a wife beater is totally improper.
Right. So that's the question. Yes. So, and then let's say he was an accountant. So does that mean that he should be fired from being an accountant? I think it's worth. I want to think about it some more. Maybe we'll come back to it.
And how far up the line does it go? To the coach?
Yeah,
to the
coach.
Owner? To the head of the NFL?
So I think some of it.
Did bad.
Right. So some of it obviously is a PR. I don't want to say a stunt, but it's a PR thing.
Yeah, but the numbers are about 40% in the NFL right now.
Really?
Yeah, it's a huge number.
So then it's a cultural issue, right? It's a culture issue.
The African American community, you get into a whole other direction.
Right. So I think this is probably where it's more complex than just putting it in an isolated circumstance.
Because here in football, does football have to be bigger than the star?
So I think these. I want to think about it some more. Yeah.
And there's also the aspect that she doesn't want to prosecute.
Right. So she wants to be mochel.
She married him.
After that. Great.
She married him.
So this gets to the next topic, which I wasn't going to talk about today, which is about tshuva. So let's say the person wants to be a bal tshuva, and the wife says, okay. So then what happens? I think these are, maybe we should think about some of these elements next week. There is a tshuva in sports. There is a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about.
She wants her wealth to be the NFL player.
Exactly. Her checkbook is about to get a lot thinner. So let's conclude with one other observation, which is interesting to think about. And that is that, okay, it's one thing for me to say, okay, doc, you can't punch me in the nose or hit me with your cane. Okay, but what if you're upset at me and you want to slash my tires? I'm not going to say whether you ever did that or not. But let's say, theoretically, you decided, you realize, okay, I just learned this Rambam. The Rambam says I'm not allowed to hit him, but what about if I slash his tires? And, like I said before, Dr. Paul has no problem. He's going to write the big check afterwards. You just want to, you know, it's like...
Have some fun.
You just want to have a good time. Not that I think that's such a good time, but theoretically. So where does it say in the Torah that you're not allowed to slash my tires? So that's a question. Where does it say that? Where does it say that you're not allowed to damage someone? And this gets to a whole bigger question in terms of abuse, in terms of monetary impact. Where does it say in the Torah? You're not allowed to muzzle an animal, so certainly you shouldn't be allowed to hurt a person. Okay, but lo sachsum shor b'disho, it's a good suggestion, but that's really about how the animal goes about its business, more a question of, am I allowed to cut off the leg of your animal? Forgetting tzar balei chaim for a second, let's say your animal wasn't alive or whatever. So there is a big debate about this in rabbinic literature, but it comes to a very important principle, and that is alluded to in what Rav Menachem Alon, Shofet Menachem Alon alludes to, and that is there's something that we can call the ideal Torah society. And that what we need to do is we need to take certain sources and kind of cobble them together, and when you do that, you build a view and understanding of what Jewish society is supposed to look like. And that's what Shofet Alon is trying to do here, is trying to say, what does Jewish society expect in this kind of context? So the same thing is true also over here. So we can suggest that maybe you can't find, I would challenge you, Doc, you can't find a single pasuk in the Chumash where it says that there is a prohibition to light my locker in school on fire. It doesn't say that anywhere. But there are a lot of other prohibitions. If you look on page 7, the Yad Ramah, the same Yad Ramah we alluded to before, he mentions... You're not allowed to cause someone damage. And the second underline here, this is in Yad Ramah, not in Sanhedrin, but in Baba Basra, Mishum Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol.
in the underline, or Mishum, what's the last line there, the mitzvah? Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. You know, I wouldn't appreciate it if you slashed my tires. Right, like Hillel HaZaken said to the convert who came to him, don't do something to somebody else you wouldn't want done to you. So obviously, I wouldn't appreciate it if you slashed my tires, so I shouldn't be doing that. I can't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, they should fall down. So I certainly shouldn't hit them with a brick. I shouldn't break their car. You could say further, the Chasam Sofer, and we'll just give a brief overview because we could spend a whole lot of time on this. Chasam Sofer says that it's umvinishmartem od lanafsho seichem and lo samar al dam reyecha. If I see somebody drowning in the river, what do I have to do? I got to throw him a life preserver. So I certainly shouldn't go when they're swimming in the river, take their clothes and throw them in the trash bin. I don't want to say that's never been done, but the people, shtick look like that. The Chasam Sofer said that's not allowed. The Rashash, Rav Shmuel Straussen, in his commentaries in Maseches Ksubas, he has another suggestion. You know how you know you're not allowed to tear somebody else's stuff? Because I have mitzvah of Hashemah Saveda. So if I see your wallet on the street, I have to turn it to give it back to you. Obviously, I can't come into your house and incinerate your wallet. It's the opposite of Hashavas Aveda. And finally, Rabbi Yonah on the last page, in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, he says on the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, ninth line down in the middle of the line, the first word of the line is Efshar, after the little Aleph, five lines in the commentary on the bottom. The top is the first part of Pirkei Avos. The first word of the line is Efshar Lameidabe, Shaharei Kosov Lo Sigzol. It says, don't steal, v'chol nezikin b'chlal osolav. All damages are included. This is Rabbeinu Yonah writing in the 13th century in Spain, telling us, not only am I not allowed to steal your wallet, I'm also not allowed to break your wallet. I have to respect your property also. So we could say, well, wait a minute. Each one of these is a little bit different from the other, but what happens when you put all the laws together? What do you see is what is the Torah trying to teach us? What's the motivation? Is that number one, you have to respect other people as people. And there's an Issa Daraisa to harm them physically. And also you have to respect them and their property. And there's an Issa Daraisa, according to the vast majority, whether it's from Hashavas Aveda, whether it's from not allowing them to sink in the river, whether it's from not stealing, all of these things together, they teach us what the society is expected. What is expected of us as a society? So I would say all these things put together can help us formulate an ideal that we need to strive to. Now, whether we're perfect or not, nobody's perfect. And the question of, practically, how does society deal with this? That would be even a further, more nuanced look at different societies, how they treated these cases. And there are several other cases in rabbinic response over the last 1,000 years, but you could see that the rabbis in the Bati Din, like the Maharam Rutenberg, he treated it very, very severely when it came to the issue specifically in terms of domestic violence. So hopefully this is a halacha v'lo l'maisa. We should never get into the conflicts with anybody in general. I'm not going to be nervous when I see you in the hallway, am I? No, okay. And the ideal of creating this kind of society that has patience and savlonos, and sometimes you see in shul, and sometimes it's even the craziest thing. Sometimes in shul, fights break out over aliyas, over who is the chiyuv in the shul, and then all of a sudden you need to take a step back and wait a second. What do Chazal want to create for us? What kind of society do we want to create for ourselves? And that's what we need to strive to create that kind of environment. Thank you all for coming. Mirtz Hashem, we will reconvene next week. Next weekend is a very busy Motzoi Shabbos. We have the Kumzitz, Slichos. In the morning we have 6 o'clock morning for Vasikin, and then I'll be here at 9 o'clock.
Will we have a shir again?
Yes, we'll have a shir again.